Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Heretic Hammer Podcast. I'm your host, Marshall, and this is my co-host, Dylan.
Hello, hello.
So today, though, I thought would be a great day. I've seen discussion online about this recently. Well, I guess less specific, a little bit, I guess discussion is still true. I've seen people like kind of, especially content creators, kind of talking about how enjoyable games of 1,000 point 40K are. And there's kind of a small portion of me that actually is kind of looking at that. And it's kind of maybe starting to think and feel that that small portion. And again, I think this is probably pretty small given the known player base of either, but is kind of the enjoyment that people see from either playing or watching people play Age of Sigmar Spearhead. I think every now and then. So if you ever watch a 40K, or not even 4K, like a Warhammer like reveals show, you will find a plethora of very salty and bitter, because it's, you know, obviously this is a Twitch or YouTube chat. What do you expect? But very salty or bitter 40K fans who don't want to hear about Age of Sigmar or the old world, right? I think it happens a lot where like people will look at something wrong in 40K that they don't like, right? Like Psychic right now in 40K is pretty lackluster feeling, right? Like it's you have a librarian and you don't really feel like you're commanding a space wizard, right? The only faction that kind of gets close to this feeling, and even then it still feels not as what it used to be, was the Thousand Sons, or is the Thousand Sons. But like Great Knights right now, a lot of players have a huge gripe because they feel like their only two psychic representations are to cast gun and the ability to teleport frequently around the map, which that teleporting makes them a good army. Like they win games, right? But that's not the point, right? Like they're not mad because their team is bad. They're mad because they don't feel like psychic space marines that have the power to manipulate the minds of others, and not only that, but push their own minds to a limit that is different than even the normal non-psychic space marine, right? That they feel like it's the missing piece, you know? Mm-hmm. And one example then of this and then is like some people look at that and they're like, well, 10th edition sucks because they got rid of the psychic phase and therefore we don't have good psychic. And my answer to that is, I don't think you need a psychic phase to have good psychic. You just need to write good psychic abilities to have good psychic, right? Like my point is, the problem isn't that 10th is bad. Like the rules of 10th, like the core rules of 10th are bad for psychic. The problem is they didn't write any fucking abilities on the data sheet. Like, you know, it's the problem isn't the whole dish. The problem is you have rotten onions.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Like the recipe that was laid out to you in the dish is still fine. But if you have a small portion of it, or the portion you're trying to use is bad, then it will, yes, make the whole thing seem bad. But it's not the fault of the recipe. And so I think that gets exacerbated when you get into really big games, you know, and then people have started to look at, I think, Age of Sigmar, and then they see all the people who are in love with the rules, who, you know, are like, is this the best Age of Sigmar yet? And then they see that and then they're like, you know, arms crossed, like, mm-hmm. What can't mine be like that? What can't people say that about my game? And I'm not saying that's everyone, right? But I think that does happen. It mostly happens subconsciously. Like it's just people don't realize that's why they're upset, but that's maybe why they're upset, right? It's that grass is greener on the other side concept. And I think that no shortage of that comes from Spearhead, which a lot of people, you know, will you know, will say, or like the baseline thing that people will say is like, well, Spearhead is like the combat patrol for Age of Sigmar. But the difference is that Age of Sigmar tends to be a little bit bigger. It almost like the smallest Spearhead is like 500, where like 500 is like more the upper range of combat patrols. So like a common combat patrol is still even like almost like 350 or 400 points, where like a common Spearhead feels closer. I don't know. I guess I can't speak for every Spearhead because I haven't, you know, I don't have them all memorized, but like a lot of the Spearheads I've seen are still like around like 550, 600 points. Right. And then they use their specialized rule sets for Spearhead to like make it balanced. Right. And I think a lot of people see that and they're like, oh, that's interesting. And then they think about it. And then I think that's the thing, right? I think that's started to get people to think about it. It started to move people and they're like, you know what? Maybe I should try playing 40K at 1,000 points more, right? Because realistically, really, no one's going to just pick up combat patrol. That shit's got to get fixed. It just doesn't work. It's not balanced at all. It's bad. Mm-hmm. It's just partly, honestly, it's too small, you know? But yeah, so like a lot of people though think about like, well, what about 1,000 points, you know? Because realistically, especially if you responsibly collect Warhammer, it's really not hard to get to 1,000. Like I always kind of looked at it as like, it's really easy to accidentally get to 1,000 points, but it's really hard to figure out a good way to get to 2,000 from 1,000. Like I always think of it as like a, like, getting from 0 to 1,000 happens really fast, but then all of a sudden you're like, oh, how am I going to fill out the rest of this? Because you're not just getting like, oh, I'm going to get like these three troops and that's 300 points. And then I'm going to get, you know, this leader and that leader. And then, you know what, I'll put in one vehicle, like a transport or something. And that, you know, it's like, okay, now I'm at like 800 something. And then I can add these enhancements. And now all of a sudden, I'm at 920. Okay, I can add one extra small character. All right, I'm at 1,000. And you're like, you know, it's only like, it's a handful of unit numbers. So like, obviously it's still a decent number of models. But like you're just not like, you're not hitting it. You get to it because you're just filling out the baseline of an army, right?
Right.
It's the default. Like I need X number of troops. I should try to maybe get one vehicle in there, at least a transport, and then, you know, a character or two. But then all of a sudden you get to that extra 1,000. You're like, I guess I can just like build on vehicles. Like, I mean, what's nice about 2000 is that's when you can get into really skew lists, right? Like where you can get like, I'm going to have a very vehicle focused army. I'm going to have a lot of walkers, some dreadnoughts, or I'm going to have big characters. Like I'm just going to really get elite, you know? You can do that stuff a lot easier when you get to 2K. But like the thing is like 1K ends up being like this really simple spot to get to and just kind of start rolling, you know? Now, I was gonna say, if anything, some of that could go to where maybe you could push it to like 1500 instead of just 2K. But, you know, like the reality of at least getting to like 1500 or 2K, kind of like I was alluding to, is that it does make it easier if you want to play with like Primarchs. Like I remember I was looking at a post where somebody commented that they were like, I think I'll always still prefer 2,000 points because I'll always want my, I'll always want to have my ability to have Primarchs battle each other, just like bro fight each other constantly on the battlefield. And I'm like, you know what? That's fair.
Yeah, fair enough.
I mean, like you get into 40K because you want this like epic feeling battle.
Mm-hmm.
But that being said, I find that, yeah, it's a lot easier in general, as we've kind of talked about before, to get people to play or buy into smaller sized game modes. And so I kind of thought it'd be good to talk about some of those game modes that Warhammer has, and maybe kind of what are some of the, like, especially because this gives me another mode to talk about why I think Kill Team is S tier, especially with third edition.
S tier.
I love Kill Team. I've talked about it before. I've talked about it before. Like I love both for normal 40K and Kill Team. It's just Kill Team always draws me in for so many of the reasons that I'll talk about. But like it just to me is so, it's such a great way to play 40K. Just especially honestly, just even from the fact of like how easy it is just to like draw someone in, you know, like here you go, let's play. So let's start off with Kill Team. So since I've already kind of talked its praises here,
mm-hmm.
So obviously for those who don't know, you know, Kill Team is a small skirmish game set in 40K, where you often generally will have teams between 6 and 10 operatives against another team of 6 or 10 operatives, you know. Or, as is introduced in third edition, you can essentially build two halves of a team, or you can play with it. The nice part is there's kind of ways to futz with it.
And then you can play flexibility.
Yeah, to play a co-op version of Kill Team.
Ooh.
Yeah, which is called Joint Ops. Recently, Mountainside Tabletop did a video where they created rules, kind of like they fuddled the rules a little bit and created a set where their Kill Team went against a set of World Eaters that were joined with Angron. So not the most narratively correct, but honest, but made for obviously a very interesting and like kind of fun game and experience. It's just like, because like they were playing a Tempestus Aquilins, which are essentially just like very elite skilled guardsmen.
Mm-hmm.
And realistically, those guardsmen would instantly get bodied by Angron. Like they would just explode. But, you know, again, it's part of it being a game, having fun, all that stuff, you know?
Yeah, of course.
But what's nice is when you do joint ops, you can kind of do and have a fairly narrative experience. It's actually something that I'm thinking of developing because I'm not, so far, at least, I haven't been super sold on every 40K RPG that's been out there. And I've debated finding ways to utilize Kill Team as a function to help make do one with kind of around a Kill Team and make it work, you know?
Yeah.
But regardless of that, so that's the obvious benefit to Kill Team in general, joint ops or competitive, is that since generally, kill teams just come in one box, and though kill team boxes are more than a normal box, they pretty much come with most everything that you really could need to start playing the game, especially giving the digital rules and objective cards that you can find online. Now, objective mm-hmm. cards is maybe something where, until especially Wahapedia gets updated, you may have to kind of finagle around to get like the tactics and like objective cards. But they're definitely findable and out there. But you at least will get like certain markers you need. You can kind of utilize obviously things that are around you. You could just create markers, you know, right? Like so for like some of the tokens and stuff where it's, for example, like you could make your own conceal and engage order tokens, right? Like, I mean, the ones that you get from Games Workshop are made of cardboard, right? Like, so nothing's stopping you from coloring and creating ones or printing them off, you know, and then cutting them out. Mm-hmm. Obviously, like, that, there's some finagling required in that to do it nicely. But even then, you could just, like, switch them, you know? So one way or another, there is a way to very cheaply and easily make those tokens. And then, like you can in 40K, just like use terrain, make terrain out of things around the house, like a Pringles can, you know, or like a box of like a, you know, a tiny like little box thing or your paint pots, you know, stuff like that. So as long as honestly, you can just even get like a box of the models, you at least can one way or the other get started. Because though the reason those boxes are more expensive is because they have some of the tokens that you would otherwise need. So like they'll have like different marker tokens to indicate, you know, certain portions of the game, to obviously indicate what equipments and special stuff that they have available to them. Like these will be in the box with that, you know, say like the Blades of Cain. And then obviously this is technically a benefit for, you know, any small game, but obviously Kill Team will have some of the least number of models. And so you can, when you are actually painting said models, you know, you're just looking at, you know, hey, here's, I have 8 or 9 models that I'm building. That's all I have to worry about. I don't have to worry about building, you know, and it's a building and painting and designing and it, like a super
you're
group,
a full army.
You know? Yeah. You know, because like this would be one of like 3, you know, of any one of these that you would get and use. Whereas in Kill Team, obviously, it's just the one. That's it.
Yeah.
Especially with my like, cause like, especially with like someone like me who has like their snail's pace of painting. It's a game that obviously could be very beneficial for that. And then the other big thing for Kill Team that I personally like is, because while we'll talk about it, it's the one thing that I've kind of been like told, like, well, here's maybe why you should do, maybe you would like something like Necromunda. And the reason that I prefer like Kill Team is because at least you can still play with the models of 40K and the factions, right? Or at least most of them. In some capacity. Right. Kill Team, the second edition had more extra rules to have non-Kill Team labeled boxes as armies. Third edition, at least as it stands, doesn't have that. Don't know if they'll kind of shift that in the near future. But, like, for example, like, you can play with, you know, Striking Scorpions. I mean, you can play, there's a Kill Team for Felgor Ravagers, which are the essentially Beastmen that have a very small but niche and kind of non-existent place in Chaos Space Marines. But in Kill Team, they're right there. And you can play as Beastmen in 40K. And you can, like, play as these, you know, these Chaos Warped mutated beings, right? Like, because this is a faction available to you that really you likely aren't going to see much of, if at all, in standard 40K.
So then, because I'm just thinking about, like, so you have these like Kill Teams that are unique to the Kill Team game itself. You know, these models aren't being made for the main Warhammer 40K game. How much compatibility is there for Warhammer 40K units from the main game and trying to use them in a game of Kill Team? Like, is that possible at all, or are you kind of limited to these specific Kill Team model sets?
No, they actually are pretty, for the most part, they're pretty dang compatible. They all will, most if not all, will have essentially, like, depending on the Kill Team itself, obviously, will have a special rule set in, or like unit type in 40K. So for some examples, like Blades of Cain, Hand of the Archon, Hearthkin Salvagers, although maybe that technically isn't as true. Yeah, I won't use that one as an example. But yeah, so like Blades of Cain, Hand of the Archon, the Legionaries, Pathfinders. Those are all units that are just pretty much just slightly more unique versions of their 40K counterparts. So now, for example, you in Kill Team, one of the benefits that you get in Kill Team is you can have more fun with having units that have kind of every weapon, right? Like you have somebody with this gun, somebody with that gun that's very different, right? One has a sniper rifle, one has a heavy machine gun. You often wouldn't put them in the same unit in something like 40K, like the full game, but you can do that in this. Now, and that's the thing, right? But then if you tried to just like bring that team of legionaries into 40K, you might have some weirdness. But as I've talked about before, like obviously depending on how your group or your store or whatever feels about WYSIWYG, or like how you can maybe magnetize it or whatnot, you could always find a way to just be like, all right, well, this I'm just going to play this as a standard legionary team. They'll have this, they'll have these weapons, and you're just clear about it. You say it and you move on, you know. But otherwise, like, a legionary's team, one way or the other, is still just a box of Chaos Space Marine legionaries, which is a squad that they're just called legionaries, you know. And Pathfinders, the Pathfinder kill team is just Pathfinders in the Tau Empire. And then there are some like the Vespid Stingwings, you know, the Tempestus Aquilins, that both of those both just came out. But then similarly, like the Nemesis Claw is a good example of a kill team that was released obviously for kill team, but then they have a specialized unit label in Chaos Space Marines that's just called Nemesis Claw. So they're not legionaries. Okay. They are Nemesis Claw. What's great, though, about the Nemesis Claw kill team box is that it really is just a legionary's box. At least this is how it was. Maybe it's changed since they re-released it, but as far as I know, this is not the case. Is that it's just a legionary's box with a bunch of the extra kill, like Nemesis Claw things put on top of it. So if you wanted to have a very full-on Night Lords army, it probably would be, it's obviously a little bit more, but you could technically just keep getting these and then just put the standard legionary loadouts on them instead of all the special ones. But then like the helmets and shoulder pads and all that, they can stay on, like you can put those on set on this kill team or on your legionary. Just more of a thought. Obviously, mm-hmm. it's not an economic thought. It's just a fun thought.
Yeah.
It's mostly for people who are like really don't care about the cost part.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So like there are teams for each of those, and otherwise, yeah. Like, so they'll have individual unit names for them, or they're just one way or another kind of copies of their unit types. You know, Sisters Novitiates are an example as well of one where it's like, you know, there's a kill team called Sisters Novitiates, and then they just have a unit in the Sisters of Battle called Sisters Novitiates. I don't know exactly every team's like compatibility or existence. Like, I don't 100% know how Hero Tech Circle technically works, but like part of it is, for example, that like in Hero Tech Circle, you have a couple of Death Marks in it. And obviously Death Marks are their own unit. So I don't know if it's one of those where this as a kill team is like, as a kill team doesn't really have a unit, but there it has like the parts or pieces of characters and units that you can then put into your army. A good example of that as well is in the Angels of Death kill team, which is just Space Marines, but essentially most of the units in Angels of Death are character units. Not all of them, but a lot of them are character units or like single pieces of a Space Marine box. So like, you know, it's, for example, that's a kill team that you could play if you have already a Space Marine army. You can just be like, all right, I'll grab the Lieutenant, one Intercessor, another Intercessor, an Assault Marine, a Captain, whatever the pieces, because they all like fit into different units.
Okay.
So Angels of Death is definitely a going from big game to small game kind of army rather than the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The best way to, if you were going to do Angels of Death, is whenever they come out with the actual box or getting the starter set, because then at least you can actually get the full Angels of Death kill team. And the Death Guard, I forget the Death Guard's like special name, but the Death Guard kill team that they, I think, revamped. I believe there was one already, but they like revamped it for third edition and this starter set. But yeah, like that's kind of the way that works, right? There is special rules for it, but I don't think every team has something, but if anything, they have a way to be usable going into some other army, whether it be maybe parts of it or something else, right? But like, for example, Corsair Void Scarred can be utilized in 40K, and sometimes they are pretty fun. They can have the issue again of like having too many unique units, but people have fun with them, and so it works out. And then that's the other big thing, is that kind of with that, it lets you play around with a bunch of different armies at a significantly lesser cost. I mean, for example, the starter sets in any version of 40K are always going to be pretty great values, right? And even for, you know, mainline 40K. But like, you know, the starter set for Kill Team is another great example, where it's like, it's $112. And obviously that seems like a lot, but you're getting literally everything you need to start playing the game. You get a mat, you get MDF terrain, which obviously isn't like the super fancy, you know, classic looking ones, but like, it's realistically the most of what you need. I actually don't mind MDF terrain personally, because it's great for traveling.
Yeah, a lot easier to pack up and carry.
Yeah, like if you've ever tried to travel somewhere with full size terrain, it's a pain in the ass. Mm-hmm. because you like need to like, you don't have, luckily most of the time you don't have to be as like fragile with it, but like you still have to like put it in a big box or something. But otherwise, you know, you get the MDF terrain, and then you're getting two full kill teams, and then every marker and measuring thing that you need, and obviously a set of dice. That the dice are pretty basic and boring, and it's whatever. But like, still, you are getting a very complete set. Like, this truly is everything you need for kill team. It's not like getting the starter set for, say, like 40K, where it's like literally a starter set, where it's like, you can get this, and then you can maybe, you know, play with what's in the box, but like to play the full game, you'll need to get more. It's like, if you wanted to, you could get this kill team starter set box and never buy another thing. If you wanted to, like, if you were perfectly happy to play, like, especially if it's like you and a friend are like perfectly happy to play Death Guard versus Space Marines to the end of time, you can do that. And it's all, and that's nice. For $112, which, again, if you split it, pretty reasonable. You know, it's conceptually the price of two decent Gundam models, and you get the whole game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's almost like you're essentially getting a board game, like a high end board game. And you can always, if you're okay with just using those same units, you can always just sort of pull out that starter set and play it every time.
Yeah, when I think of the starter set value, I always think about it. If you can make it as close as possible to what you're willing to spend at a video game that you really like or would be excited for, then, you know, especially like relating to like your willingness to get, say, like, you know, limited editions and stuff like that. If the set can be given to you at a roughly the price of a video game, so like in this case, right, $112, you know, divided by two, you know, you're getting that $56. You're both spending less than a modern video game, like AAA video game, you know. From that perspective, then it's like, it feels more like justifiable, because like, you know, people buy really poorly released video games at $70. Yeah. And not to say obviously that they're going to find Kill Team is perfect or whatever, but like if you end up enjoying it, obviously you can get a shit ton of time and hours and enjoyment for paying $56. So like if it's similar to the realm of a video game, then I kind of always look at it as like, okay, this is all right. Which is similarly why I think I look at the Kill Team boxes as not so bad, because it's not too far off from being at that point where it's like, yes, maybe I spend, you know, close to $70, but I'm getting the same value that I would if I got a decent video game, and I can actually play the game still. Especially like if you have an LGS, where then you literally only need to get the models, and then your LGS can provide the board, the tokens, the terrain.
Yeah.
And that's all of why I love Kill Team, and it's obviously where a lot of time has been spent. But a similar game to Kill Team that technically is within a 40K realm in universe is Necromunda. Now, I know very little about Necromunda, which is why I can't speak a crazy amount to it.
I sure have heard the name Necromunda.
Yeah. And so the basics of what I know about it, and one of the things that partly my thought review about it will be actually more based on a conversation I had with Eons of Battle once, when I was kind of talking about why I love Kill Team. And he was like, well, I think you really love Necromunda then. And I was like, maybe. But I'll get to why maybe it's not exactly why I'm not jumping into it personally, but why maybe you could be. Is like this obviously is still very 40K, and you'll see a lot of the themes, some of the designs, the factions that exist, but it's all centered around a hive world, one of the most populous and biggest hive worlds in the setting of 40K, Necromunda. So this is one that is like a full-fledged hive world where top to bottom, you know, it hits your like big, you know, like it's about as close, honestly, as you could get to probably the like getting very cyberpunk theme type things in 40K, like where it's just got your really big wig, your nobles. So instead of corpo, it's nobles.
Yeah.
And then like you just fall all the way down into the dregs of those who are gangers. You know, there are cultists. You've got both Gene Steel cultists and Chaos cultists. You've even got like certain elven influences around. There are various gangs that go into various gang wars, and like the setting has a whole lot fleshed out to it. And we will actually talk about Necromunda at some point, in terms of like getting all the details, learning about some of those prominent gangs, what are, you know, why, how the city came to be what it is, you know, all that stuff, but not what we're going to do today. But this is about a game that is roughly about the size of Kill Team and has very similar portions to it. I can't necessarily tell, and someone maybe can help me with this, in that I don't know if by like table size that if it's a bigger or not. But that is kind of one of the big things, at least with it, is that it's maybe that middle ground between like kind of getting to like Combat Patrol-esque to Kill Team. Like it might be kind of a decent maybe middle ground size wise between those two. So maybe like larger units or boxes of stuff. You know, like for example, the Hive Secondus, which is kind of like the current version of Necromunda's in their starter box, you know, has seemingly decent sized teams in it. I can't say that they necessarily look like they're bigger than some Kill Teams, but I don't feel like they're necessarily incredibly far off either. You know, like some portions of it seem like it's bigger, but again, that I can't speak to from experience. But otherwise, you know, it hits the styling of it definitely hits a very Mad Max kind of feeling aesthetic.
Oh yeah. Especially with the gangs.
Yeah, like the Escher gang, I think, is a classic of being like very Mad Max feeling.
Yeah, half of these could be Streets of Rage boss characters.
Yeah, right. So, you know, but then you will get like, you know, you'll get some relatively familiar faces from some other factions in 40K. They have squats,
prospectors.
Which really are Votan, you know, or, you know, maybe we're part of Votan or whatever, like that kind of stuff. And part of what it was squats is obviously there are some realms of where you can kind of fit in. So I don't know exactly how big, and like I said, like I don't necessarily know how big Necromunda gets and like who goes with what, you know? So like I can probably tell, like, for example, that Vansar are Chaotex. Probably go with Vansar gang members in terms of unit compatibility, but like I wouldn't be able to tell you like what any of the other ones run into and stuff like that. But yeah, like you'll get, you know, you can get a number of like certain interesting feeling, you know, squads. Like you can get gene stealer cults in, especially like, you know, you have the like Atalan Jackals, which are a unit that is usable in gene stealer cults, mm-hmm. you know, and then, you know, obviously from that point, even if you look at the starter, the high secondist box, you know, you have very Tyranid, straight up just Tyranid looking things in there. And then, you know, you have different automata effort that could be utilized, and like it's very gruff and like industrial looking, but it can get very tight knit and tight packed, much like Kill Team, like the Hive War box kind of shows. So it seems to be very interesting. And one of the reasons that I was told that maybe I would like it is that it has a very narrative feel to it, which is something I always liked about Kill Team, is I feel like it's really easy to just kind of like, because when you think of like, when you read the books of 40K, honestly, most of the fights that you see and hear of in these books are roughly about the size of a Kill Team fight. It's very rare that you get like a really big army battle book or description, you know. Maybe you'll get it, for example, in like the Dark Imperium, you know, and those modern books. But like when we read The Lion, it was pretty much The Lion and a Kill Team, you know, going against various other Kill Team sized units of legionaries. You know, so that's kind of why I think I like Kill Team, and then I always think of it. But Hive War or Necromunda, I've been told, has a very similar feel, where like you can really kind of get into like this almost like I said, very cyberpunk-esque kind of plot and kind of way of moving around the game and like playing with your friends, where you kind of treat it almost like you guys are fighting in gang wars against each other. And every time you win, maybe you get certain turf. Like you could maybe even create your own map or something, you know, like you can kind of play with that. And I love when these games do that, because that's what really attracts me to them, you know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think of playing as a kid Dawn of War Soulstorm and Dark Crusade, where you're fighting in these armies and then taking territories. This has a very similar feeling, but in the tabletop, which especially nowadays I appreciate more and more and more.
Yeah.
All right. And then the final 40K kind of small game mode I wanted to talk about today was boarding actions. I have now, and again, I can't speak a crazy amount to it. I've done my research on it a bit, but I haven't been able to play it. That being said, I really want to. Boarding actions is generally a like 500 point game of 40K, and it's generally pretty standard 40K with just like a couple of extra or like removals of certain like rules or strategies or whatever to fit the scope of it. But it's essentially like you're playing a combat patrol sized game, but it's in a ship. Like you have boarded a ship, or I mean, hell, you could just say like you're even in like a really tiny, you're in a space hulk, or you're in a really narrow cornered building, you know, on a planet. You know, it doesn't necessarily always have to be a ship per se, but like the thematic part with it being boarding actions is, yeah, like you've boarded a space hulk, you've boarded a different ship, like just a ship in general, and these armies now have to clash and fight against each other, but in a very close quarters fashion, where there's all these walls and there's actual doors that you have to walk open through. And you can choose to keep open or closed, all that type of thinking, but like all centered around this, again, like 500 point game. So like you're still using the full units, right? So like if you have a squad of Sisters of Battle, that unit has to make it through. It still has to deal with coherency, right? They still have to. They can't be like completely cut off from each other from the other sides of the door. You can't just like have them split up and go different ways. You know, you are still competing with a essentially a portion of an army. And then with that, that's where some of the shifts on some of the strategies and rules come in, is obviously just to fit going into this tight corridor.
Yeah.
But I really love the idea of it again, because again, it gives me this whole narrative feel thing of like you're boarding, you know, you're invading a vessel that you're at war with, or you're trying to discover the secrets lost in this space Hulk. But the Tyranids are here, or Chaos Cultists are here, or the Votan is also trying to take the scrap, but they're stealing our stuff. And, you know, we need to stop them. Whatever it is you kind of wish to come up with on it, you know, you get to think about it. You can roll with it. And then what I love, honestly, one of the things I truly love is the door system. Like, you can just kind of be like, all right, I'm in a bad position. I can fit my unit through this door. So I'm going to go through, I'm going to use essentially all my my actions, if you will. I'm going to open and then close this door, because then you're completely invisible. You know, you're on the other side of what is effectively a blast door. So it, your guns and whatnot, you can't shoot through it. And then, well, they can't really necessarily, especially if you are near the door, when they open the door, they're kind of done. You know, it's like,
yeah,
they've opened the door, but you kind of are now going to get the advantage, especially if you've like maybe backed up to the back of the room or something, where like now they've opened the door and they've tried to come in. Well, now they've used all their stuff, so they can't really hit you. So that next turn, shooting gallery, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I love kind of the play with that. It's just at least enough of a different feel. And it, to me, that's the thing, is it's better than playing, I think, a 500 standard point game of 40K. Because I think the problem with playing a standard 500 point game is you have to make the board smaller for it to work. And even then, it just always feels like you really get spread around. And then the technical board size for 500 points is just so small to me that it's just like you either create gigantic shooting lanes, or you just kind of got it, like you're just like dip diving everywhere. Like our setup for our game we played wasn't super ideal, you know, for like a 500 point game or in general. But it was kind of just what I did, because it was just like, it's not a whole lot of guidelines for this. Well, with boarding actions, at least you can kind of get that. There are guidelines. You can kind of get it set up. The things will connect in the right ways or whatnot. And you can kind of play with it. You can customize it. You can figure it out, you know. But like, it's a little bit easier to just kind of finagle the terrain, you know.
You know what it makes me think of?
What?
And I could be way out of pocket on this. It makes me think of Baby Park in the Mario Kart games. Where,
go on.
What's so crazy about Baby Park, right, compared to other tracks? Well, you know, you're normally going to have like 8 racers, right? No, regardless of which track you choose, you're always going to have 8 racers. Or it's 12. I can't remember off the top of my head. But Baby Park stands out because it is a much, much smaller track. It's literally just like a giant oval with like these super sharp turns. There's no... The overall track itself is very small, and as a result, the other key difference is that like it has more laps. You know, by default, it has more laps than a traditional Mario Kart track.
Yeah, it has 6, I believe.
But they haven't reduced the number of racers on the track. It's still the same amount of carts going at one time, and so it results in chaos, because you have all these racers. There's not nearly as much room for them to maneuver as there is on any other track. They're throwing items all around, but it's the same items that would be available in the other tracks anyway. So it creates just this chaos that some people love, and then some people are like, screw this. I hate this track. This is the worst track. This makes me think of that, because it's taking kind of like what you were talking about before of like, you know, when you do like that 500 point play and we're doing it on a smaller map, but you can feel the consolidations that are having to be made because it's, we're still playing the same game. We're not playing a new type of game that is meant to accommodate that smaller playing field. And so that's like when you're, everything you've shown me with like the kill team and with boarding actions, especially, it's like, this is actually, it was designed with that smaller team in mind. And so everything about it is different. It's not just that the map is smaller. It's that there's more actual rules and mechanics that have been adjusted and introduced to facilitate the fact that this is a game about a smaller scale conflict.
Yeah. I mean, I think that is like a I think that's actually a really good analogy for why I think like doing a boarding actions kind of versus, you know, like a standard 500 point, just like normal game is that, yeah, I would say like playing 500 points on the map, if you do it on like the technical correct size map. Yeah, you're right. It feels like it has like the baby park feel where it's just like,
yeah,
what are we doing? Where
you're not changing anything major about the rules of engagement within a core Warhammer 40K game. You're just, you're taking the map and you're making it smaller.
Yeah. Whereas then like if you play 500 points on a standard size map, you know, like that would then feel like, that would feel like playing standard size Halo team deathmatch, but on, oh shoot, what was that sand map called in Halo 3?
You thinking of Zanzibar? Or?
No, the one that was
it wouldn't be Zanzibar.
The one that was like the desert.
Hold
on, I can get this. Halo 3 maps. No, don't get me trending. Sand trap,
yes.
Yeah, it's kind of like playing like standard size like Halo 3 multi like team multiplayer on sand trap. Mm-hmm. That map is huge. It was like really set for like big team.
Mm-hmm.
But like it, when you play standard team deathmatch or capture the flag or whatever, like you pick up the flag and it's like, oh my God, I have to go all the way over there. Like that's, it's so much. And
right,
that's kind of what feels like playing 500 points then on a standard size map. Which then I'll kind of flip around to going back to, I think then that's what makes 1,000 points. If you want to play standard 40K, you don't want to do any of these special ruled games, you know, because the reality is Kill Team is going to have its own special rules. It's not going to be the exact same as standard 40K. Like the parts about how the dice are rolled are kind of the same, like where, you know, you hit on a 3+, you know, and stuff like that. But like everything else around it, it's not going to be the same, you know, like who you can shoot and when is going to be different. But so like if you wanted to play like a you know, and obviously boarding actions even gets rid of some of the stratagems and changes them. If you wanted to play like a smaller sized version, but of a normal 40K game. Well, then 1,000 points is great because on the current modern version of 40K, which is actually slightly smaller than what it was, I want to say maybe honestly like not crazy long ago, like just kind of before Kill Team came out, because one of the reasons they changed the size of 40K even at like 2,000 points was because they wanted it so that if you had four Kill Team mats, you could essentially like put them together and create a 40K map. That was like the thing.
Oh, okay.
So the measurement, it's why the measurement's really weird. Like it used to be a nice kind of round number, but like now it's like this weird, you know, 40, well, I forget what it is. It's like 45 by 63 or something. Yeah, you know, like shit like that, where it's like, what? Like why? Why is it that way? Well, that's why. It's because they created a relatively good sized number for Kill Team, and then we're like, well, let's make it so that you can buy four Kill Team mats and then create one standard map. But that's what's nice then is because that map became smaller, playing 2,000 points kind of feels cramped sometimes. Like, you kind of get into deployment and you're kind of like, especially if you're doing short edge deployment, like Dawn of War deployment generally is kind of okay because it's the long edges of the table. So like, you can kind of spread your army out a bit. But like, if, especially if you have like a horde army, it gets real compact real fast. Like, it's surprising how much is in there. It's kind of partly what makes running units that go into strategic reserve kind of mandatory. So, but playing 1,000 points kind of fixes that, because they fill up the board decently well. Like, really, there's not much issue with 1,000 point games on the standard size table. But you kind of get the ability to like create space, you know, like move this way, get into cover over there, not worry about where you're going to put then your other six units that need to go to roughly the same spot, you know? And you know, you think differently, like in your strategy, right? Like, well, I've kind of accidentally put most of the eggs of my basket on the right side of the field. So I'm kind of just going to have to abandon the left side of the field. And I think I'm just going to try to focus on the center, the right field, and my home base, and just kind of go from there. Maybe harass them and their home base by shooting. But otherwise, like, I'm just going to abandon that objective because the unit I sent over there got destroyed and everything else is over here. It makes you think a little bit differently, where like in 2K, it's a little bit easy to be like, well, that one charge didn't go well, but I've got these other three units over there. You know, it's like, you don't have to worry as much until like maybe you get to like halfway through the game. And that's when suddenly you're like, all right, now I have to abandon that objective. It just makes the pace feel like more like you're going, you're moving somewhere. Which we still have to play that 1,000 point game. I haven't forgotten, but like, damn.
Yeah, we'll get to it. We'll get there.
Yeah, I know. Time has really moved around us. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. But yeah, like, so that's the fun part about them playing 1,000 points. And, you know, like, I've seen this kind of get discussed on, and I would love to see what people have in the comments about, like, what is your kind of, you know, sub 2K points favorite, you know? And if anything, I would love to hear people's thoughts. Like, do you think that it should be, should the standard be 1,500 points versus 2,000, right? Because part of the reason it's only 2,000 is because of kind of like point power creep. You know, like, for example, what was the 2,000 points game of not even crazy long ago, like of like 7th edition, is like close to like 1,500 points today.
Okay.
Maybe a little bit less, you know, it's somewhere around that from what I've kind of seen. And so like, there's just there's a bit of, we're just like points inflation going on. So I'd love to hear do people think that maybe points should be, or that games like tournament play games should be done at 1,500. Do you prefer playing at 1,000? Or in other than that, like, if you have a skirmish game or like very small points game that you like to play, what is it? Do you like Kill Team? Do you like Necromunda? Do you like boarding actions? Let us know in the comments. I mean, and for your sake, I mean, I think the reason I get interested in thinking about your perspective in this is that obviously, like, you know, you're kind of my like perspective gamer for for this, you know. And it's like, I can talk to somebody about Kill Team, I think, and be like, have more confidence that I could maybe convince them to play it.
Yeah. No, I'm immediately interested in all three of these. Boarding especially, I'm like, yeah, that something like that where it's this really an interesting little offshoot type thing with its own mm-hmm. rules. And the what you're bringing up about the scenarios, about like the circumstances for like how you end up boarding and things like that, the way that it can almost become more of like a horror game or a more suspenseful game in that way, is that's really interesting to me.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, like, that's a big, obviously, and that's, this is for Kill Team though, but like, that is one of the things that I kind of really like about Kill Team, is almost, and like the like the co-op mode is, and like some of my thought is that it's like you can kind of almost create a scenario where like maybe you play with a GM, or you just do it properly, where because like you and your partner, you know, there's kind of like a quote unquote AI system for the what's called NPOs, you know, non-player operatives. And like you can kind of create scenarios where it's like, yeah, it's like we're going in and we're having to fight these, you know, we're having to fight like a bunch of Gellerpox infected, or like some mm-hmm. plague marines that are, you know, coming after us, you know, just all that type of stuff, you know.
Yeah, the fact that it's not just Warhammer 40K, but smaller, it's giving you actual, it's laying a groundwork for you to actually create some more unique scenarios that you can't really necessarily do within the standard Warhammer 40K rule set.
Yeah, I mean, and so for boarding actions, a great example of this is Play on Tabletop did a series where a chunk of it is from their members only, but they have three public episodes out. Called Terror in the Void, where it's a boarding action series, and it's inevitably the games were played out between Ultramarines, Leagues of Otan, Tyranids, and Death Guard. And the way they played through it was that whoever won each battle got essentially a benefit and a way to kind of recoup themselves, where the loser got some type of penalty that prevented some of their recoupability going into further games. And then it culminated into one big, like, four player free for all.
Mm-hmm.
And so like that was like where, and then they're going into different objectives, like obviously like, trying to get, you know, just trying to get points, obviously, which would maybe be centered around like we're trying to upload something into the computer system, or we're trying to attain, you know, gene seed or whatever, like that kind of stuff you can add to every one of these. And that's kind of what to me like really sells boarding actions, right? Is like it's not just here's the objective, because conceptually this is just a good spot on the battlefield, right? Or mm-hmm. you're going to burn this because like you're burning this objective because that way you've claimed it, but then no one else can take it, you know. But like boarding actions always has a very clear, or like lots of when you make it, it has a very clear like you are getting this point because it has your data, or if you're Tyranids, right, this is where there are gene supplies, so you can, you know, eat it and to attain and evolve, you know. A great game example, if you would like a video game that feels like boarding actions or can inspire you for your boarding actions campaigns, it's a mid game, but it's a great game for this purpose, is in Deathwing Enhanced Edition specifically. Never buy the original version.
I should have guessed it out loud. I knew you were. Yeah. I was thinking Deathwing.
Yeah. The reason it's a mid-game at this point, because a lot of the things that plagued it originally are generally fixed, actually, with modern hardware, is that it just kind of like, especially if you're not playing multiplayer, it just gets very repetitive, you know? But like that game is like hard, you know, like it gets hard because you're fighting like an onslaught of Tyranids and you're going through these tight spaces. And now boarding actions would obviously see you with greater numbers of allies, but you can think of it as you're one of those units in this boarding actions scenario. You're one unit that has been sent into this hallway, and all of a sudden you are facing a slew of Tyranids, you know? That's the cool part to me, and that's kind of where, like, I think you can kind of get into that mentality. And I very much intend, actually, to maybe get a boarding actions thing kind of prepared. I'm probably going to 3D print these things, but I'm just, I've got, I've got plans, you know, thoughts and plans. But it's something that has always interested me for 40K, as much as I love Kill Team, you know. But yeah, anything else about small 40K you kind of have any thoughts or feelings on?
No, I think my biggest thought is that it interests me. I find it really interesting, actually.
All right. Glad to hear it. That'll do it for this episode. Next week we'll get back into lore. And then we'll see what else comes about until we eventually get to Fulgrim. Just gonna keep teasing that, you know.
it's on the horizon. We're pointing at it like the WrestleMania sign. It's just like all
the distance there. We'll see you, Fulgrim, at WrestleMania. All right. Other than that, see you next time.
Goodbye.